This is Ricky R. speaking at the Burton Terrace Group in February of 1996.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I'm Millard and I'm an alcoholic. Through God's grace and this program, the people I haven't have refrained from drinking alcohol since 22nd of July of 79. I'm grateful for that. Let's pause for a moment of silent prayer meditation. Each and every man will follow it with a serenity prayer, please. Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Becky, where you are to read how it works, please.
My name is Becky, and I'm an alcoholic. Been sober since September 16th, 1990. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault, they seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we cannot. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was no until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to take personal inventory and when you're wrong, promptly admit it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. knew that Polynesian power could have relieved our alcoholism, see that God could and would if he were sought.
Thank you, Becky. Do we have any ministers or would you stand and give us your name, please?
My name is Anthony Williams.
Glad to have you here, Anthony. Keep coming up. Thank you. Good to have you here, Chris. Good to have you here, Bob. Welcome to Burton Terrace Group, and come back anytime. We're always glad to have you, and especially the newcomers. I'm not going to read all these meeting schedules. They're on the board, and if you can't read that, well, get one of these cards, take it with you, and get somebody to read it for you. But anyway, it's all out there on the board. And our speaker tonight, Rick R. from Jacksonville. I've never heard Rick behind the podium, but I've talked to him at length from time to time. I met him, I don't know, probably a year ago, but he's got a good message for us. And anyone that wants to learn something about the basics of Alcoholics Anonymous might want to listen to what Rick has to say, because he does talk about that inky part of the book. Come on up, Rick.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ricky Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink of alcohol since August 20th, 1990. I found out real quick that wasn't the solution, not drinking. My life, I guess if you're an alcoholic in here and you quit drinking, you found out too that stopping drinking seemed to make life worse. And you know, that's what it did to me every time I stopped drinking. I hope I don't bore anybody tonight. There's a friend of mine up here in Dallas that was down where I left speaking, and he told me about some guy he knew here in Dallas that you know, was bored. It seems like we're in AA about 6 months. I don't know. It's not new anymore, and we just get kind of bored, you know. And he said this guy went to his sponsor and told his sponsor, he said, "Man, there's something wrong with me, and I don't know what it is." And he said, his sponsor told him, he said, "Well, you know, give me something to go on, or I won't be able to help you." And he had a mean sponsor like I got. I say he's mean, he's really not. But he told his sponsor, he said, "Well," he said, I'm just bored." And his sponsor said, "Well, you know why you're bored?" And he said, "No, I don't. Why?" And he said, "Because you're boring." And, it made him mad. And but he thought, you know, that clicked in his brain. He said, "One of these days, if I stay sober and I get to sponsor someone and they come tell me they're bored, I'm going to let them have it." Well, he stayed sober, and he had him a little Al-Anon wife. And you know, us alcoholics can never put anything over on Al-Anon. They're quicker than we are. And he was in there sitting in the recliner watching TV, and he looked in there in the kitchen, and she was pacing back and forth and back and forth. And he looked in there, and he said, "Honey, is something wrong?" And she said, "I don't know. I guess I'm just bored." And boy, it clicked in, you know. And he said, "Well, honey, you know why you're bored?" And she said, "Yeah, because you're boring." And that, you know, can't win for losing. But I hope you're not bored tonight. I hope I don't talk about drinking alcohol very long, because I figure if you're in this room, you probably know how to do that as well as I do. But I was raised in an alcoholic home. I'm just a victim, you know. And I thought, you know. And we went bar hopping at an early age looking for Dad when we lived in Grand Prairie and Arlington. And sometimes we'd find him coming out with a different woman under his arm, and my mother would try to run him down in the car. I got to watch him. He had 20 DWIs. He went to TDC 3 times. You know, I tried to blame my alcoholism on my dad one time, but I don't blame my alcoholism on my dad. If anything, I should have had a better chance of not being an alcoholic. because he showed me what not to do. And he went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he read the big book, and they tell me he knew the big book real well, but he never stayed sober. And I've since found out, knowing the big book and doing what's in it is about as different as not drinking and recovering from alcoholism. But I was afraid to drink, so I smoked some pot and I did a lot of drugs, and it seemed with me my friends would get this euphoric feeling that life was good when they smoked pot, and if I felt inferior or depressed or a lot of these emotions, and I did different drugs, they intensified that feeling that I had, you know, and I didn't get the same whatever they got out of it. And one day I was living in Grand Isle, Louisiana. My father took lots of geographical cures, so I got to see Alaska, Arkansas, lots of Texas and Louisiana. And I had some things wrong with me before I ever took my first drink. And I'm one of those that believe that ism is added to alcohol because I believe alcohol is a treatment for what's wrong with me and not the cause. But I had a few things I'll tell you about that I would have never told you about, but I've done a fifth step, and they just really don't bother me anymore. I was scared to death of women. You know, in high school, I would ask a girl out. When I was drinking, I'd get the courage up, ask her out. And I would sober up, and I'd be scared to death, you know. What the hell am I going to do, you know, with her? And, you know, of course, I would have a few drinks and before I went out on the date. I was afraid to fight. You know, but a few drinks, and I'd jump on somebody bigger than me, and I've taken some tremendous beatings from doing that kind of stuff. There's a guy in our group, you know, and you know, we're all rigorously honest, and I know this is a rigorously honest story he told me. And this guy, I'm glad I didn't drink with him. He used to walk in bars, and one time a guy was talking too loud in the bar, and he had just got out of San Quentin, and the guy was talking too loud, and he just went over there and shot the guy because he was talking too loud, you know. And I'm glad I didn't drink with him. But he said that one day he was fishing on the riverbank, and he had a bucket of minnows beside him, and he was drunk and had him a fifth of whiskey there. And he staggered a bit there, and he bumped into the minnow bucket, and it fell over, and all the minnows went right down the bank of the river and into the river. And he was stomping around there and cussing, and he looked down, and there was one of them that hadn't made it quite in the river. So he picked him up, put him in the empty minnow bucket, continued fishing, and he looked down there, and the minnow was in that bucket with no water, and his gills were barely moving. He was just about dead, and he was too lazy to walk down there and get him some fresh water. So he opened his bottle of whiskey and he poured some whiskey in on that minnow. And he said that minnow came alive and had more life in him than he did when he was in the water. And he said it really amazed him to watch the minnow, you know, really lively in this alcohol. He said it wasn't long and he wasn't getting any bites, and he reeled his line in, and sure enough, something stole his bait. So he looked down, and the only thing he had in the minnow bucket was that one minnow in the whiskey. So he got it out and put it on his hook, threw back out in the river, and he said it had just hit the water and something hit it and almost broke his pole, line, and all. And he reeled it in, and it was a 12-pound bass, and that minnow had him by the throat. And, you know, and I could relate to that story, you know. That made sense to me. You know, another thing I had wrong with me, I wet the bed a lot. I'm not talking about till I was 3 or 4 years old. I was working offshore in the Gulf of Mexico, 19 years old, on these drilling rigs with these big macho guys, and wake up, my bed's wet, you know. But this was all through growing up, and, you know, I was afraid to spend the night with people, stuff like that. You know how kids can ridicule you. But I had some things I considered wrong or different about me. And one day this friend in Louisiana told me, he said, let's go get something to drink. And I had been wondering what alcohol would do to me, because I used to see my dad. We lived in this mobile home, and he'd come home and sit at the bar stool and drink until he and the bar stool both just fell over like you'd cut a tree down with a chainsaw. He never tried to catch himself or nothing. They just fell over and hit the floor, and that's where he stayed. So we went out and got us both a bottle of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. And I believe that the physical allergy, if you're new here, the only difference in me and a non-alcoholic, I have something in my body I don't understand and really don't care to. But when I pour alcohol in my body craves more alcohol. And we call it a physical allergy. That's what our book calls it. And a phenomenon of craving develops. But he had a bottle and I had a bottle. He was 2 years older than me, a lot bigger than me. He drank about half his bottle and I drank all, every bit I had. And I didn't remember any lightning bolts going off or any bells ringing or nothing. But I went home and I felt better than I'd ever felt in my life. And these things that I considered wrong with me, you know, were okay. That alcohol changed my perception of the reality I was living in. And so I came home and I took the alcoholic test, the only one I knew of. I sat on the bar stool and I never fell off. And, you know, matter of fact, I shoved off the bar and I spun around on the bar stool and still didn't fall off. And I said, thank God I'm not like him. And I believed that for 17 more years. I started getting in a little bit of trouble. I've seen the inside of the jail several times, which is not a requirement for membership in AA. It seems to help, though. It did me. And a marriage and a failed marriage and all this kind of stuff. I had a deal happen in Memphis, Tennessee. I got offered a job that I had dreamed about for about 10 years, and a guy offered me a job, and he was making about five times the best money I'd ever made. And I could be a big shot, which is, you know, what I wanted to do. And I was like Bill Wilson. I thought I had arrived. And I was with him, I think, 6 weeks. And I was in Memphis, Tennessee, in the owner's Suburban. And I happened to be going the wrong way it wasn't a street, it was a boulevard. It was about four lanes, Winchester Boulevard there in Memphis. And I remember coming in and out of a blackout, and something else different about me, when I got to go use the bathroom, I've got to go right now. You know, I can't put it off. And I told these cops, you know, they were waiting on the breath machine to come. I said, you know, I need to use the restroom. Let me just step over here on the side of the road. And this was like, kind of like Central Expressway, you know, just cars all over. They said no, and I guess they was afraid I was going to do it anyway, so they handcuffed me and put me in the back seat of their Shelby County patrol car. But they made a mistake. They handcuffed me in front. And so while they were waiting on the breath machine, I filled their floorboard up, and they weren't real happy with me when the breath machine got there. And they kind of slapped me around a little bit, and I told them I was from Texas. By God, and I'll have your job. And I ended up being a big joke up there. But I stayed in there for 8 days, and this guy had been giving me cigarettes. And when he ran out, he'd go get them from somebody else. And they ran out, and we was smoking Bugler, and ran out of that, and we was saving I call them the roaches, and rolling those up. And they'll choke the hell out of you, but boy, they're good if you need a cigarette. And the eighth day I was in there, I was in the chow line, and this guy that had been in the drunk tank with me, he said, let me give you a piece of advice. And I said, what is that? And he said, whatever you do, don't take any cigarettes from anybody. And I said, why not? And he said, because they'll want sexual favors from you if you do. Well, I've never been that scared in my life. But had somebody slipped me a six-pack of Miller Lite in there, I said, come on in here and see what you can get. You know, that's just. But I said the famous jailhouse prayer, God, if you'll get me out of this, I swear I'll never touch another drop of alcohol. And I got out that day. My enabling mother sent the money up there and got out. And they had one flight leaving Memphis that night. Flew into Dallas and caught a bus from here to Tyler. And I lived 29 miles from Tyler, and my wife, I thought alcoholics were the only ones that carried resentments, but she wouldn't drive to Tyler to pick me up. You know, I felt she should be concerned about me. I've been gone so long, but she wasn't. She'd had about all me she wanted. But I did not want to go to church. I felt too full of fear, guilt, and remorse, I guess. But I called the preacher, and he and a guy came over, and this guy that was with him used to be an alcoholic, he said. Now, that may be true, I don't know. But, they talked to me, but I still felt a little too low to even go to church, you know, because I had this cruel, punishing, vengeful type perception of a God that I grew up with. I don't know if that's what they told me or what I perceived they were telling me. But I didn't go to church, and there was a distant cousin of mine that had been in Alcoholics Anonymous for probably about 20 years, and he was a real miserable man, and I didn't want anything he had, really. And he had tried to help my dad, and my dad was a lot smarter than me, and he never stayed sober in AA. And I didn't think it worked, but I didn't want to go to church. So I went to two AA meetings, and I don't know what they said. The second meeting I was at, someone said, "By the grace of God, I've been sober since their sobriety date." And the next thing they said was, "Today the goddamn car tore up." Well, they taught me in church that you'll go to hell for saying that, and I didn't want God striking that building and me in it. So I left and went next door to a church. And I tried to do everything they told me to in church. I got up and I read the Bible. I had a pipeline to God, I thought. And I was fairly content, but I still felt apart and different. I didn't seem to fit in. And I stayed sober 13 months and 11 days. And I began to think, well, shoot, I've been off this alcohol this long. Surely if I started drinking again, it would be like when I was 14, and it'll be like a new drinking career, and I can have a couple and watch it, you know, and I can just be real vigilant and control it. And one night, I was kind of like Fred in the book. There wasn't a cloud on the horizon. My wife was out of town. I ran into an old buddy of mine, and he had 11 beers in a cooler, and he'd already had his couple and quit, you know. And I said, "Greg," I said, "let me have one of those beers." And he said, "Oh no, you don't need to drink," because he was one of these guys that was bigger than me. And I'd get drunk and start something, and he'd have to end up whooping me, you know. So I said, "No," I said, "I just want to do it as an experiment, because I've never gone this long without a drink." And he said, "Well, all right," you know. So I drank that one, and it didn't seem to have any effect on me. So I drank the other 10 he had, and till he was out. And, you know, the physical allergy immediately kicked in that I was not aware of at the time. But I drove home 6.5 miles out in the country on a winding farm to market road. I never bobbled going home. Remembered everything I did. I didn't black out. I woke up and I didn't have a hangover. And my wife was in San Antonio, and I couldn't wait for her to get back to tell her I've started over. And you should have seen the look on her face when I informed her that I'd started over. And I told her I can drink a couple and, you know, and stop. And we would go to the nightclubs. But I don't know if we ever saw anyone else in there but each other, because I was watching her and she's watching me. I was watching her because I wanted her to turn her head long enough for me to swap this empty one out for a full one. And she was watching me to make sure I didn't do that. But the craving inside me was so strong, I wanted to just rip the bar apart to get another drink. To make a long story short, 3 months later, I was in that incomprehensible, demoralized state again in Cherokee County Jail, and I couldn't believe I'd gotten myself there, and that didn't stop me from drinking, though. I drank a couple more years, and my wife had all the fun she wanted. She moved out. My dad died of alcoholism in 1988, 51 years old, and my mother had divorced him, married another alcoholic who believed he was not an alcoholic because he worked for Coca-Cola for 31 years, and he had never lived under the bridge, and he didn't get out carousing, he drank at home. She went to wake him up June the 7th of 1990, and he was cold, and he had an esophageal hemorrhage and thrown up half a small wastebasket full of blood, and he was dead. August the 20th, right after that, after my wife had left me. I woke up one morning, and, you know, alcohol was not the problem. It was a problem, and there's a lot of problems happened because of me drinking, but it was not the problem. Because my wife had left me, and that was a problem. And me not being able to see my daughter. The Internal Revenue, I owed them several thousand dollars, so I just quit filing for like 5 years. That was a problem. I had warrants out for my arrest that was a few more problems. I could not make a living. I could not pay my bills. My credit was ruined. I had a lot of problems. But I had a solution at that time. It was alcohol. And when I drank alcohol, the problems were okay. It changed my perception of reality. But I woke up one morning. I couldn't hardly breathe. I was gasping for air, and my heart was racing. And I had what I've heard in AA called a moment of clarity. And I knew if I continued to drink, it would kill me. And so I'm here thinking I have an alcohol problem. So if I have an alcohol problem, the solution would be no alcohol. So I quit drinking, and my life got worse than it had ever been. And I started going crazy. Thank you so much. I literally thought I was going crazy. And I called this girl I used to do some business with, and she tricked me, and I told her I needed to see a psychologist because I thought I was going crazy. And I knew deep down I didn't have an alcohol problem. Had she told me, here, I'm going to send you this alcohol and drug abuse counselor, I wouldn't have gone. But she said, I'm going to send you to this guy. And I went to him, and the third trip there, I figured out he was a alcohol drug abuse counselor. And I was hard-headed enough. The first session was free, and then it was $60 an hour after that. And it took a free session and $240 floating checks and cover for him to convince me to go to one AA meeting. You know, and I told him, I said, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work. And, you know, and I believe I've never said a truer statement in my life. I don't believe Alcoholics Anonymous does work. I believe we have a program here that I must work. I came into AA and I wanted to be happy, you know, like Ray and Jim and some more of you guys I met. But to be happy like them, I had to do what they were doing. And I found it in my life impossible to go in a bar and get drunk without drinking alcohol. And it's the same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous I found in my life. You know, to be happy, joyous, and free, I have to do what someone's doing that's happy, joyous, and free. They told me when I got to AA to, they suggested I get a sponsor, and I got a sponsor that I've made, tried to make famous. It's called an answering machine. He said, call me, and we'll talk, and we'll go to meetings, and we'll do this. And I'd call, and I'd hear this answering machine. I'd leave a message, and I was going crazy. We never went to any meetings together. I never saw him. He never called me. So, and two, I was ashamed of being an alcoholic, so I drove up to Tyler 30 miles from my home so no one would see my vehicle exposed to an AA meeting. But I ended up getting another sponsor, and this sponsor basically told me to make a lot of meetings, read the big book, and don't drink. And so I was reading the big book, not drinking, making lots of meetings, and the more I did this, the worse my life got. And, you know, and I'm sitting here thinking, you know, what's going on here? You know, these people seem to be happy. I'm doing what they told me to do, and my life is worse. I was sitting in a meeting, I don't know if I was sober a couple months, 6 weeks, a couple months, and I had never seriously thought about committing suicide until being sober and sitting in an AA meeting. And because my life was worse than it had ever been in my life. I was better off in jail, you know. At least I didn't have any responsibilities. But that night we read chapter 3, the part about Fred, who wouldn't believe he was an alcoholic. And I had so many problems, you know, that I had to think about, because somebody else wouldn't, you know. I needed to think about them, I guess. And I didn't hear what anybody read. I didn't hear what anybody commented about, except for this one guy that's one of my AA heroes. His name is Daryl. And Dale had a voice that, you know, he can speak in a normal tone, and you could hear him over at Town East Mall from here. That's just the way he is. And he's a hell of a guy. Y'all might have had him up here before, but he's real good. But Dale's voice caught me, and he said what he thought was the most important thing we'd read was where Fred said that quite as importantly was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. And I latched on to that little bit of information, and I got home, and I didn't know what the spiritual principles were, and somebody told me to look in the preface of the 12 and 12, and it tells me what they are, and if I do these certain things, not only will I not drink, I'll be happy and useful. And all I ever wanted to be was happy. If it took drinking to do it, that's where I am today, you know. But I have a solution other than that today. And my sponsor asked him about the steps, and he told me to read the book and do what the book says. So I read in there, we are over 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And any books I've read, there's been one author or maybe two, and I can argue with that particular author or those authors, but this one supposedly had 100 in it, or over 100. And it was their experience, and so I was going to be kind of, it was going to be kind of tough to argue with this many people. You know, and it told me right here, precisely, and then over on page 20, it said, you know, you may already be asking yourself, what do I have to do? Well, it's the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. And then over on page 29, it talked about these clear-cut directions. So I would read precisely clear-cut directions, that what they did, and read through there, and I got over there, and I saw all these neat, wonderful things on page 83 and 84, exactly what they did, what they got. But I would read all that stuff, left to my own devices, and I would kind of tell myself, now, here's precisely what they did. I wonder how I ought to do it, you know. And I was looking for some kind of loophole, you know. But basically, that's the way I worked through the steps. And I think, the best I could do going through the steps. And I reached a place in Alcoholics Anonymous where my life really was better than it had ever been. But I reached a place in Alcoholics Anonymous where I hear referred to a lot of times as reasonably happy and content. And, you know, one thing I love is our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I kept reading in there, and it talked about, it didn't say reasonably happy and content. It talked about happy, joyous, and free, which was something above what I had been experiencing. I had made amends, you know, with this ex-wife and a lot of other folks, family members and things, but the Internal Revenue deal had me. And this sponsor that I had at the time, I would tell him about this problem, and which he's a wonderful man. I love the man today. But he would tell me, well, if it was me, I might want to go do this. And he would kind of share it with me. Well, I never did do anything. And one day I ran across a guy. I say ran across, I visited with him several times. And the man was happy, joyous, and free every time I saw him. And he loved the big book also. And I had about 6 months on him in sobriety. He sobered up about 6 or 7 months after me. And he told me a little bit about their sponsorship. You know, there was 3 pages of stuff, these guidelines on the sponsorship, that I had seen before, and me and another guy sat over there and made fun of them one day. And, you know, it's a lot of stuff like getting to meetings early, and staying late, you know, making a certain number of meetings. He even asked me to drive in the right-hand lane on a 4-lane highway to remind me that I'm not number one today. And, it, you know, it does remind me. I don't always do it. But, you know, but there was a lot of things I thought, you know, that it was just crazy to me. But it was real strong sponsorship. And one day I was telling him about this problem with Internal Revenue, and I made a mistake. Well, I thought it really was, and I asked him to sponsor me. And he gave me these guidelines, you know, and I agreed to do these certain things. And I was telling him about this problem with Internal Revenue. He said, okay, here's what I want you to do. Go do this and call me. Okay, well, I didn't want to call him and say, well, I went and did it, and I called him. And here I owed the Internal Revenue several thousands of dollars and didn't file for 5 years. I do my part. I take the action and get out of the results. My group had told me to turn it over to God. My marriage was worse than it had ever been, sober. And my group said, well, just turn it over to God. And I found out God didn't want it. It got much worse by me turning it over to God. And my sponsor said, this isn't a program of turning it over to God. We turn our will and our lives over to God, our thinking and our actions. We think, try to think and act like He wants us to, and we turn the results over to God. And see, what I did, I want to turn the action over to God and me take care of the results. And that'll bring a lot of serious problems. But I did what the man told me, and I got a refund check from the Internal Revenue. My credit was ruined. No one would loan me any money, you know. And I needed a car. The one I had was about gone. And he told me, go up there, take the action. The very next day after I got this little small refund check, I called the bank. My wife had been telling me, well, did you call up there and see if we got the loan approved? Well, no, they've been busy. They won't, it's going to be a few days. I knew they were going to tell me, like always, you know, no, we don't need people like you doing business with us. I called up there and this lady said, we'll finance whatever you want to buy, 100% of the manufacturer's suggested retail value. You know, and it really blew me away. This sponsor told me what to do in my home. See, my ideal home life is to get up in the morning and drink my coffee while my wife irons the clothes for the kids, gets them dressed, cooks breakfast, feeds them, washes the dishes, gets herself ready, gets them to school, and then me go to work, come home, and I like ESPN and the Discovery Channel. And my deal is to sit in the recliner and watch ESPN and the Discovery Channel while she's washing breakfast dishes, fixing supper, bathing the kids, washing clothes, cleaning the floors, and all this kind of stuff. And I wondered why she was kind of irritable, you know. And they had told me that how you make amends to the family is just don't drink. You know, and I've done a little research on that. I believe there's three places in the book that said that, you know, that not drinking is just only a beginning in this deal. Just the very beginning is the not drinking. And I thought it was the ultimate goal that we were reaching for here is to not drink. But in a lot of groups I go to, it is, you know. But I thank God I found a group that very seldom is drinking ever discussed. And they talked about it. And I told my sponsor, I said, he heard me say I was a recovering alcoholic. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, if you will do this, and he's one, he didn't tell me as much as showed me. He showed me page by page and showed me that it was a textbook and all this and that. And he told me, he said, if you will do what's in here, you won't have to say you're a recovering alcoholic anymore. You can be a recovered alcoholic, and there's a far difference between a recovered alcoholic and someone not drinking. And it has really blown my mind. I really didn't believe him. I didn't believe a lot of stuff he said, though. But the man told me, he said, you go home and you get your butt to work. You go home and wash the dishes or cook or whatever, fold clothes, wash clothes. But I had a problem. I said, well, wait a minute. I said, she don't work. He said, I don't care if she don't work or not. You're doing it to get out of yourself. Oh, okay. So I went home real reluctantly to do this kind of stuff. And he told me the big kicker is not to expect absolutely nothing in return. And I would go home and I'd wash a few dishes. You know, and in the past, if I ever did any of that, I'd wash them and I was waiting for her to come around the corner and praise me for what, you know, and tell me how lucky she was to have a husband like me that would wash a few dishes, you know. She didn't do that, so I was real disappointed in her. But And I went in there and didn't want any praise and just did it just to get out of myself to try to help her have a better day. And it made me feel wonderful, you know. And it changed her, you know. Another thing my sponsor told me was, he said, there's an old cliche in Alcoholics Anonymous that says you can't change anyone but yourself. He said, that's a big lie. He said, I can change anybody by the way I treat them. And I didn't believe that because I'd heard just the opposite. He said, I can slap your teeth out and you'll come up a changed man. I guarantee you. He said, I can put my arm around you and tell you how you have enhanced my life as you being a part of it, and that's going to change you also. And that's true. Of course, I can't control anybody, but I can literally change my wife, you know. About once a month, she has a pretty rough time. And I can meet her at the door, and I may have to lie to her, you know. I may have to tell her, you know, I was going down the road today, and I just realized how lucky I am to have a wife like you. What if you would have been a drunk like me, you know, no telling where our kids would have been. Man, it changes her, and it sure makes me feel good doing it, you know. I'd love to tell you I do that all the time, you know, but I don't. You know, getting out of myself makes me feel so good, and I think, man, I ought to get up in the morning and just want to do this full blast, but I wake up every morning thinking about the only problem I've ever had, me. It really amazes me, but I've had a couple of real, real good days. I got to go over to a prison yesterday and share with a bunch of guys, and the big topper on the whole deal, after I got through sharing with them, I got the 12-step a guard. You know, and after I talked to him, I figured out what the prisoner's real problem was in there. I think it was him. But this has been a fantastic life for me. You know, a sponsor not telling me but showing me, you know, and I'm one of those that I've always said that, you know, if the new guy's ready, you can't say anything wrong. If he's not ready, you can't say anything right. I had sponsored at probably 25 guys the first 3 years or so I was in the program. One of them was 31 years old and he died from alcoholism. One was 42 years old and he drowned in 14 inches of water. Drunk. The rest of them were in prison or out there enlarging their story. And I kept thinking, well, there's nothing I could have done, you know, better. But I read back in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, you know, in the early days they had a group in Akron and they had a group over in New York. And they had this crazy idiot from Cleveland that decided to start his own group up there, Clarence Snyder. And he ran him an article in the paper. And they were deluged by alcoholics. I mean, they were outnumbered. And, you know, you would be 12-step today, and because there were so few of them, you were sent out to help the new guy tomorrow. And he wrote Bill Wilson a letter during this time, and he said, the groups are 6 months old, we have approximately 60 members, and we've had only 8 slips. That's phenomenal. But I see today, those guys got out of the only problem they ever had the very first day they were in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I always hear, oh, you need to help yourself before you help someone else. And I told my sponsor that. He said, why'd you come to AA? And I said, to help myself. And he said, well, I don't know how your life has been, but he said, I tried to help myself for 45 years and it just damn near killed me. You know, and that really clicked, you know. That's what I had been doing all my life, was try to help me. And I don't like to get in the back of the big book. But in the back of it, there's a few non-alcoholics that make some sense back there. One of them, I believe, is in the religious view of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it says that AA works on the truly Christian principle that a man cannot help himself except by helping others. And that was just as backwards as I'd ever heard, you know. And you know, to me, I found out anything spiritual makes no intellectual sense. I want to tell the new guy, well, man, let's work on you and get you better before you try to help anybody else, you know. And the big book tells me, and I believe it's talking about the very first day in working with an alcoholic, for him to place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. And that don't make any sense to me, but I can see what it does for the guy. You know, it gets him thinking about someone else's problems and trying to help them and not himself, you know. But it's been really a real eye-opener, you know. But like I said, none of these guys that I had worked with didn't stay sober, much less be happy. But as a result of a sponsor, you know, walking me page by page through the Big Book and showing me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the last 2 years, or 2.5 years, I guess, there's 7 different guys right now that I sponsor. And they're not just sober. They're happy, joyous, and free. You know, there's a guy that I love everybody I sponsor. This one guy, he came in, and he almost died from alcoholism. And before I get into that, give you a little of what we did. The sponsor I have now showed me how to work all the steps. But I had heard, you know, I'm working on my first step. I'm writing my first step. I did all that. I stayed in AA thinking I was working first step for quite a while. And he showed me in the book. He told me to read the first 57 pages of the Big Book. And then into how it works, when Becky quit reading right there, she said, A, that we're alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives. B, probably no human power could relieve our alcoholism. C, that God couldn't whip your sock. And he asked me, he said, are you convinced of those A, B's, and C's? I said, oh, yeah. He said, well, you've worked the first 2 steps. I said, how do you know? And he said, read the next line. The next line says, being convinced, we're at step 3. And I was complicating the hell out of it. Man, I was doing all kind of stuff, you know, but that's all there is to it. All I've got to be is convinced of step 22. And I've seen him and others take the new guy, and before he's ever gone to his first meeting, he's on his 4th step. The first day, they did it with the guy. And, you know, they get into the program of action, and it's amazing. But this guy came, and he said, I need a sponsor. And I showed him the same guidelines that I've been shown, and he thought they were a little rough, too, but he said he was willing to do anything it took. And we sat down and went to work, and he would ask me, he said, what do I have to do? And I'd show him. And at first, I wasn't sure he was an alcoholic, because he wouldn't wait a couple of days. The very next day, he went to work on it. He did not procrastinate at all. And he was sober 50 days, 14 months this month. And he sponsors 3 guys, and they're just as happy as they can be. And to me, it's the neatest thing. But I, through the help of a lot of people here lately, I work for a company out of Plano here, and I cover eastern part of Texas, and I get to go to a lot of different AA meetings at noon, and I get to meet a lot of people, and I get to share with them, and they share with me, and we've looked at, you know, back, you know, it seems to me that AA started out as a program of recovery, and most of the places I go to now, it's a program about not drinking alcohol, and it seems like it's come all the way around to something different than it started out. I know this group's not that way because I know several people here. But we were talking about some of this stuff, and we had a lady come up to us. It was 15 years sober. And we were talking about some of the things in the book that's just the opposite of what you hear in the fellowship. And this lady said, I've been sober 15 years. I've never heard that. And a guy down in Lufkin got him a sponsor from Kerrville, Texas, that walked him through the book. And he's sober 4 years. He's taken a man that is 19 years sober through the work in the book today. And this man's on his 4-step list. And his first resentment at the very top is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. He felt like he's been cheated for 19 years in the program. And, of course, he had a book, you know. But I don't know, maybe he'll find out his root problem even on that, you know. But to me, it's real tragic, and I think, I sound like I'm preaching, maybe I am, but to me, it's real tragic, and I think we could keep from losing a lot of people that we lose. I know in my group we can, and we're improving on that kind of stuff, you know. But But this lady, 15 years sober, had never heard this stuff. And another lady, 8 years sober, came up. She had never heard this stuff. And it was, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me when I came to AA, ask God to keep you sober. And I was telling my sponsor, you know, about that. And he said, that's not Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, well, where I come from, it is. He said, well, Alcoholics Anonymous says you never pray for yourself. You know, two different places. And he said, right here on page 164, it says, ask in your morning meditation what you can do for the man who's still sick. See, when I came in AA, I was asking God to keep me sober, wanting to blow my brains out. And I was thinking about me and my sobriety, and I was marking my X's off on the days, on the calendar. I was still consumed with myself, and I was useless to my wife, anybody else in AA. And, you know, and it really changed my life when he had me start doing that, you know. Ask what you can do for someone else, you know. It was just getting me deeper in the problem, thinking about my sobriety. As a result of these ladies coming up with this and me just visiting with different members, and we had a workshop come up last week in Tyler on Back to Basics. And I had several people, New Orleans, all over East Texas, Dallas, Denver, San Jose, California, Los Angeles. I've had a lot of people help me, and we put something together, and it's called Back to Basics. If y'all want to get a copy of it, I left Ray some copies over there, but it's it astounded me, and some of it made me mad. What it is, it's cliches, information heard in meetings, followed by what the Big Book says, and it blew my mind. Because as I was getting this information, I had just shared it in a meeting, you know, and it really blew my mind as to how far off our program, you know, that I get. And it really woke me up to, you know, to what we're here for. And, you know, my sponsor showed me the title page of the Big Book, and, you know, he says, it does not say Alcoholics Anonymous, how thousands of men and women quit drinking alcohol. He says it says how thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. You know, and today I can say I've recovered from alcoholism. And my sponsors, had he sobered up a little earlier, his grand sponsor would have been Bill Wilson. But his sponsor told him that he used to visit with Bill in Bill's home quite often, and Bill told him, he said, sure, we recovered from alcoholism. And he said, if I break my leg, you know, my broken leg will recover. That doesn't mean I can't break it again. But we do recover. And, but my sponsor gets real, real rigid on that. I'm sure Joe's had him up here to make people mad before. Have you, Joe? But he's a super guy, and I love him to death. And, you know, the man has... you know, the book does say we have recovered and been given the power to help others. And this man, I want to tell you, this power greater than him, whatever he wants to call it, has used him in a way. It has literally changed my entire life. You know, I'm happy, joyous, and free almost every day, you know. And if I'm not, I have a quick way to get out of it. Probably 3 years I was in AA, and I'd start going downhill and getting down in the dumps and depressed, and these problems come up. I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know what to do. I was stuck, and I just had to kind of just hang on and ride it through. And he has shown me today, if I'm not feeling well, I know instantly what's wrong with me. I'm not being of use to another human being, you know. And usually I'm thinking about me, something about, you know, my problems. I need to think about them, because, you know, and that's the crux of my problem also, is my thinking. But it, you know, it really amazes me. I've always tried to get my ducks in a row, you know, and get all this stuff, like the actor in the book, you know, that tries to be the director. And just about the time I'd get everything like I wanted it, man, it'd go to hell. But I found out through sponsorship and taking some action, that if I'll get me somebody else, and it doesn't have to be an alcoholic, and try to help them get their ducks lined up in a row. Now, they may not line up, but I look behind me, and mine are just lined up straight as an arrow. It's just unbelievable. One day, I had to go down to the Cherokee County Jail for a meeting, and I want to tell you, I did not want to go. It was Sunday evening. There was a football game on. That's pretty important to me, especially this year. And my wife was in a crabby mood that day. She was squawking around the house. And my daughter was about 6 at that time. And she had asked me at least 10,000 questions just before noon. And my son, who was about 2 at that time, he was whining all day long and scattering toys and just, you know, making a mess. You know, and all this stuff was kind of getting on my nerves. And like I said, I did not want to go down to this jail. One reason is because they made a rule. They wouldn't let the inmates go to a meeting unless they were thrown in there for drinking alcohol. I mean, everybody's in there for alcoholism, basically, but they couldn't go to a meeting. And it got to where we'd go down there, and there'd be no one show up, or maybe 1, 2 at the most. But I had already said I would do it, so I go down there, not feeling well, not wanting to go down there. And I think there was 2 guys in there, and I spent 1 hour trying to help somebody besides myself, trying to help them. And I came home, and my wife was still squawking around the house. My daughter was still asking questions, and that little boy of mine was still raising cane, throwing toys everywhere, but it didn't matter to me. It was all right. You know, it had changed my perception of reality. You know, I can take the 12 promises, and I heard, if y'all listened to Joe and Charlie before, it blew me away when he talked about this. I can take the 12 promises of Alcoholics Anonymous and put when I drank alcohol in front of them, and they make perfect sense to me. When I drank alcohol, I would know a new freedom and a new happiness. When I drank alcohol, I wouldn't regret the past, wish to shut the door on it. I don't know. When I drank alcohol, fear of people and economic insecurity would leave me. And that last one, I suddenly realized alcohol was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. So I found out through experience that not drinking sucks. My sponsor says that sobriety sucks. And he says, if you're talking about just the absence of alcohol out of my body. Matter of fact, they've been going to a group over it. It's a prison pre-release program over in Overton, Texas. And they talked about this so much, the inmates have named their group there the Sobriety Sucks Group. But, you know, and that's the way I am. Just not drinking alcohol sucks, you know. But I have found out through experience, you know, by working and reworking the 12 steps of this program, that they give me the same feeling that alcohol used to give me. You know, they do for me what alcohol did, but they do not do anything to me. You know, I'm not wrecking people's lives if I'm working 12 steps. I may be making a positive difference on them, you know, but it's a neat deal. And it's about time for me to shut up. I'm a talker, man. I can go on and on. There's a friend of mine from Rhode Island that we found out he was in AA and I was in AA. He blew my bubble on my 2-year birthday. He came down. He had 5 years. He said, 2 years, huh? And I puffed up. Yeah. He said, well, now you can't blame alcohol on your peculiar behavior. And, that blew me away. But he heard me share in a couple of meetings. And he told me after meeting one night, he said, Ricky, he said, the last I heard, there was, 247 12-step programs that have borrowed the 12 steps from Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, they got one of them you need to go to. It's called Al-Anon, and on, and on, and on. So I'll try not to go on anymore, and I'll shut up. And I really appreciate y'all letting me share. And if nobody's told you today that they love you, I'll tell you, I don't even know you, but I love every one of you. Thank you.